Let us resume our Bible study today, beginning the book of Titus. Titus comes right after 2 Timothy. Let's start with who was Titus. First of all, Titus was a companion of the Apostle Paul, meaning he traveled with Paul on his third missionary journeys, and Paul used him to establish churches. We'll talk about in a minute. But let's go see in the scripture Titus as a companion of Paul. Go back to 2 Corinthians chapter 2. 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Verse 13. Paul says, I had no rest in my spirit because I did not find Titus my brother. But taking my leave of them, I departed for Macedonia. So Paul had expected to find Titus in this location, and he wasn't there, and Paul's heavy of spirit because he relies upon Titus for a lot of encouragement, a lot of assistance. Titus is a good companion to Paul. Then go to chapter 7 of 2 Corinthians, chapter 7, verse 6. Here, Titus catches up with Paul. 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verse 6. Titus catches up with Paul. It says, nevertheless, God who comforts the downcast comforted us by the coming of Titus. So Paul says, it lifted my spirits when Titus got there to give us encouragement and support. In the same chapter, verses 13 and 14. Therefore we have been comforted in your comfort, and we received exceeding more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. For, where are we? 2 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. Yeah, so verse 13 again. Therefore we have been comforted in your comfort, and we rejoiced exceedingly more for the joy of Titus, because his spirit has been refreshed by you all. For if in anything I have boasted to him about you, I am not ashamed. But as we spoke all things to you in truth, even so our boasting to Titus was found true. So Titus has been ministering in a place that build up his spirit and build up his confidence and his enthusiasm. And he's brought it to Paul and is sharing it with Paul and his other companions. And Paul says, boy, we're really comforted by his arrival. Now in chapter 8, 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 6. So we urged Titus that as he had begun, so he would also complete this grace in you as well. So they're encouraging Titus to keep up his ministry because his ministry is benefiting the whole messianic community. Same chapter, 2 Corinthians 8, verse 16. But thanks be to God who puts the same earnest care for you into the heart of Titus. Titus had the heart of a servant, one who would organize the believers into congregations and would lead them and teach them and make sure their doctrine remained on track. And that was a good heart that Titus had. Same chapter, verse 23. The congregations that are scattered around Asia Minor sometimes would be afraid when somebody new is coming to visit. Are they truly a believer? Are they coming to sell us out to the Sanhedrin or to the authorities? Do we trust them or not? So oftentimes somebody like Paul would tell a congregation that, well, somebody like Titus is coming, you can trust him. And here is one of those. 2 Corinthians 8:23 says, if anyone inquires about Titus, that is he a true believer? Is he really a good guy? He is my partner and fellow worker concerning you. So Paul says he's not just my associate, he's my partner, my fellow worker concerning you. Or if our brethren are inquired about, they are messengers of the churches, the glory of Messiah. How'd you like Paul to write something like that about you? Yeah. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 18. I urge Titus and sent our brother with him. Did Titus take advantage of you? What's Paul's obvious answer going to be? No. Did we not walk in the same spirit? Implied answer, of course we did. And did we not walk in the same steps? Yes. Paul makes a point to many of the churches. I didn't take advantage of you. I didn't come to take anything. I came to give. I came to organize, to support, to bring you to salvation, to do all things for your benefit and your glory. I didn't take anything. Why didn't Paul take offerings or anything for himself from the congregations? Because he said, I didn't want you to think I'm here for money. I wanted you to know I'm here for you. So Paul was very clear about that. Galatians chapter 2. Titus gets mentioned. Galatia's Asia Minor. Many of the congregations in the book of Revelation are right in that same area. Galatians chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. Then after 14 years, I went up again to Jerusalem with Barnabas and also took Titus with me. For 14 years, Paul has been preaching in Galatia salvation by faith. And then here come others from Jerusalem saying, no, Paul's wrong. Paul's wrong. Salvation is not by faith because you're Gentiles. You must get circumcised. You're saved by circumcision. And Paul says, I got to go back to Jerusalem. We've got to have a council about this. We've got to resolve it. You can't have people coming from Jerusalem teaching two contrary things.
This is true.
This is what we're going to find in Matthew when it talks about where two or more of you gather together. It's talking about to resolve issues of doctrine. So he goes down to Jerusalem and takes Barnabas and Titus with him. Why would he take Barnabas? Barnabas is Jewish. Barnabas is a Levite. Titus is a Gentile. So Paul's going down to say, I'm going to talk to you about the salvation that's coming to the Gentiles. Oh, by the way, I brought a token one for you. Verse 2, and I went up by revelation and communicated to them that gospel which I preached among the Gentiles, but privately to those who are of reputation, lest by any means I might run or had run in vain. Yet not even Titus, who was with me, being a Greek, meaning a Gentile, was compelled to be circumcised. And this occurred because of false brethren secretly brought in who came in by stealth despite our liberty, which we have in Messiah Yeshua, that they might bring us into bondage, to whom we did not yield submission even for an hour, that the truth of the gospel might continue with you. So Paul's explaining why I had to go to Jerusalem. We cannot have believers or people claiming to be believers teaching that salvation is by circumcision, by works. How is salvation accomplished? By faith, not by works, lest any man should boast. So they were teaching wrong. So Paul went down to, turn to Acts 15, to the Jerusalem council, headed by Messiah's half-brother James, Yaakov, for the council to resolve the issue so that everyone from now on sent from Jerusalem will have the same message.
Brother Wayne?
Yes, Miss Rachel.
What was the other companion of Paul that was a Gentile that was not compelled to be circumcised? Or was it Titus? Because it says
Titus.
Titus
is the one they're talking about.
Okay, thank you.
If you do not read verse 1 of chapter 15 of Acts, you will not understand the chapter. I've been taught by so many preachers, Acts 15, the question is, once you get saved, should you follow the commandments of God? That's not the issue. The issue is in verse 1. And certain men came down from Judea and taught the brethren. That's in Galatia. He's talking about the Galatians, where we just were. unless you're circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. So they're teaching salvation is by circumcision. And Paul says, we've got to resolve this. Verse 8, so God who knows the heart acknowledged them, the Gentiles, by giving them the Holy Spirit, just as he did to us, and made no distinction between us and them, purifying their hearts by faith. So Paul's making the argument that salvation is by faith. It's not by circumcision. Those guys are teaching it wrong. And the council comes to the conclusion of, you're right, salvation is by faith. That's the way it's always been. That's the way it was for Jews. That's the way it is for non-Jews. And in verse 19, when James announces the decision, he's the Nasi. We keep talking about Nasi in the book of Ezekiel. He was the Nasi of the Jerusalem council. He was the leader of the council. Therefore, I judge that we should not trouble those from among the Gentiles who are turning to God. What's the difference between have turned and turning? Turning are in the process. But that we write to them to abstain from things polluted by idols, from sexual immorality, from things strangled, and from blood. All those are from the Torah. They're all commandments of God. But these are the commandments that get broken most in the pagan temples. They have sexual immorality. They have homosexual prostitutes, heterosexual prostitutes. They eat blood with the animals, all that kind of stuff. And the Jerusalem Council says, if you're serious about leaving idolatry and coming to God, you have to leave those things behind or you're not serious. And then the next word, which people tend to overlook, is the word for. What is for?
Because.
Because Moses has had throughout many generations those who preach him in every city being read in the synagogues every Sabbath. So if the Gentiles that are turning to God will avoid these four things that characterize pagan idolatry and worship, they can come into the synagogue and
learn
the rest. So it doesn't mean that these are the four things Gentiles need to do and everything else they can break. You ought to know just from looking at it that that's the case. Because if those four things were the only commandments that applied to Gentiles, then we can murder with impunity, because that's not there. We can steal. There's all kinds of things that God says will send you to the lake of fire that are not included in those four things. But those four things are what characterize pagan worship. But we're not here to talk about that. We're talking about Titus. So let's go back to 2 Timothy. I say back to, we never were there, but we're going there. 2 Timothy chapter 4. It's the page before Titus. 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 9 to 10. Be diligent to come to me quickly, for Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. So Demas has turned away from following God because he got caught up in the things of this world. He would rather be wealthy, prosperous, etc. And has departed for Thessalonica, Crescens for Galatia, and Titus for Dalmatia. Demas forsook Paul. The other two, Crescens and Titus, were sent on missionary journeys. So they didn't abandon Paul. He sent them on missions. But now he's alone and says, I would like to have some support, please. So that's what he means by come to me quickly. And what is Dalmatia? Don't tell me a spotted dog. That's a Dalmatian. Dalmatia later was called Yugoslavia, and today is called Serbia and Montenegro. So Paul sent Titus to Dalmatia to organize congregations and set up leadership throughout the area. In the Catholic Church today, Titus is venerated as a saint. Okay? Was he a saint?
Yep.
Saints in the Bible are those who keep the commandments of God and the testimony of Yeshua. So I don't have any problem with them being called a saint. He was also the bishop of Crete. Crete's that big island in the Mediterranean. That's where he eventually settled and became bishop of Crete, which means all the congregations on Crete were under his responsibility.
Were there synagogues in Dalmatia?
Were there synagogues in Dalmatia? The answer is there will be, yes. Yeah, we're talking about a big area. A lot of the people in Dalmatia are going to be Gentiles, but not all. So there would have been synagogues where there were groups of Jewish people. And of course, he will do like Paul, and he'll always go to the synagogue first and then out to the Gentile community. And while you might think of Crete as a small island, it's really a pretty big island. And there are several cities in it, and each one is going to have groups of believers. So how do you gather them together? How do you organize them? That's going to be Titus's job.
Now, another question.
Another question. Go ahead.
Controversial.
This makes Titus an apostle.
This makes Titus an apostle
of Paul. An apostle is a sent one.
He's sent, so he's an apostle.
Right. In Hebrew, it's Sheliach, a sent one. Paul is an apostle of Messiah. Messiah sent Paul. Titus is an apostle of Paul.
Yeah.
Yeah. People who say apostles, that office no longer exists, what they should be saying is apostles sent by Messiah himself 2,000 years ago.
They could exist, but they're saying that of the fivefold ministries that God gave to the church, apostles, prophets, evangelists, teachers, and whatever, pastors, they're saying that the only thing that still exists is evangelists, pastors, and teachers.
And they're wrong.
They're totally wrong.
Yeah.
But that's controversial today.
Yes, it is controversial. However, it won't be when Messiah returns. Okay. So, Titus is a Greek, a Gentile. He doesn't have a Jewish drop of blood in his body. He was converted straight from heathenism. He was a former pagan. So he is a good one to go to an idol-infested island like Crete to say, I've been where you've been. And look what I have found now. He was originally from Syrian Antioch. Syrian Antioch. Where was Paul from?
Antioch.
Do you see why they might have been close? They might even have been friends when they were younger. Who knows? But at least they have some things in common. Paul wrote this epistle. An epistle just means a letter. It's just a letter. About 63 Common Era, or 63 AD. Paul died in 65, right? So Paul's getting toward the end of his ministry and he knows it. So he's starting to set up people like Titus to carry on the ministry when he's gone. What happened to Paul? He got beheaded in Rome. Yeah. So it's late in Paul's life, and they think perhaps Paul was still in Corinth when he wrote the letter, but where it was written from is not all that important. The importance is that Titus was the bishop at Crete when the letter was written, and Paul's tasking him to organize the assemblies, the congregations of Crete. When Paul goes through and evangelizes an area, there are a lot of people that come to faith, but now who's going to lead them when Paul goes? Who's going to be the pastors? Who's going to be the elders? Do they all have to travel 100 miles to get to a Shabbat service? No. So there's going to be little groups scattered around the island, and he's got to organize them into something that will be effective in ministry. I have a question or comment out here. Let's see. Drayton says, Titus means nurse. Okay. Honestly, I never looked it up, but I'm sure he's right. So verse 1, are we ready? Paul, his real name is Shaul, right? Shaul. Shaul means that he was prayed for. Like his mother prayed to the Lord, I would like a child, please. He was called Paul, too, because he was born a Roman citizen. So as a Roman citizen, he couldn't just have a Hebrew name. he also had to have a Greek name. His Greek name was not Paul. You guys know that, right? It's Paulus. P-A-U-L-U-S. Masculine names in Greek end in an S. So you can't have a Paul. You've got a Paulus. Just like Luke isn't Luke, it's Lucas. Kind of like Lucas McCain, but that's beside the point. So it begins, Paul, we know that's Shaul, a bondservant of God and apostle of Yeshua the Messiah. I was kind of surprised to find out that it's not really bondservant. The word is doulos, D-O-U-L-O-S, Greek word 1401, and it just means servant. Not necessarily bondservant, just servant. A bondservant, he's called that by the translators, because perhaps they thought that was a more accurate description, because a bondservant was one who was born in slavery, had earned his freedom, but chose not to leave the master's house, but to stay voluntarily. And they were indicated by taking the ear, putting it at the doorpost of the house, and driving an awl through it. Everybody go, ow, ow. I didn't mean a little needle, I meant a big awl. Yeah. And that showed that they continued to be servants by choice, not because they had to. How could somebody get freed from being a servant? You remember? Every 50th year is the Jubilee, and all servants go free, or they may have purchased their freedom if they had gotten the money. People got into servanthood back in those days because they got poor, and they needed food for their family, so they would sell themselves into slavery, or servanthood is a better term, and they would serve for a number of years until the year Jubilee, and then they could go back to their families. The significance of this word doulos, let's go back to Matthew 8:9 and look at other places it's used, so when we make sure we understand exactly what Paul wrote, or how it was translated into Greek, because I assure you, Paul did not write Greek. Matthew 8:9. Matthew chapter 8, verse 9. This is a Roman centurion speaking. It says, for I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. That word servant is doulos. It's the very same word used in Titus chapter 1, verse 1. Let's look at Matthew 10, so long as we're in Matthew. At other uses of the word doulos. To verses 24 and 25, Matthew 10, 24 and 25. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant, there's the doulos, above his master. It's enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher, and a servant like his master. That servant is doulos. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of his household? So just a typical servant, the word is doulos. But let's go back to Isaiah 66. To be a servant is not necessarily a bad thing. In Hebrew, the word for slave and servant is the same word, it's eved. The difference is whether you're properly paid for your employment or not, and if you're not properly paid, that's going to offend God. Isaiah 66:14. This is the way God's going to divide the world when Messiah returns for the Battle of Armageddon. And judgment is immediate death. He says, when you see this, your heart shall rejoice and your bones shall flourish like grass. The hand of the Lord, that's his benefit, his protection, his blessing, shall be known to his servant. And his indignation, that's the wrath that's poured out in tribulation period, to his enemies. And those are the way God divides the world at that point. Do you serve him or are you his enemy? You're one or the other. So Paul says, I'm in the servant category. So back to Titus. Paul, a bondservant or servant of God, and an apostle of Yeshua the Messiah. We were going to talk here about what it means to be an apostle, but Doc's already done that. It means a sent one. And here it says, an apostle of Yeshua the Messiah. Yeshua sent Paul. We know that. That's from Acts chapter 9, right? Paul was going on the road to Damascus, which means he goes out the north gate of the city of Jerusalem. And right there on the right, as you go out the gate, is where Messiah was crucified. And Messiah is there and says, who are you persecuting? Stop it. I'm paraphrasing. Okay. And then send him to be an apostle to whom? To the Gentiles. What did Paul always do? He always went first to the synagogue and then to the Gentiles. So an apostle of Yeshua the Messiah, a sent one. Sheliach is the word in Hebrew if you care. He was sent by Messiah himself. According to the faith of God's elect. The word elect means chosen ones. Let's go look at that word. Let's go to Matthew chapter 20, verse 16. Matthew chapter 20, verse 16. So the last will be first and the first last, for many are called, but few chosen. That is the same Hebrew word. I'm sorry, in this case, Greek word. So who does God call to salvation? Everybody. But does everybody respond? No. But those who respond in faith and righteousness, they're the chosen. They're the elect. Go to Matthew 22, 14, where we see the same Greek word. Matthew 22, 14. For many are called, but few are chosen. It should remind you of Matthew chapter 5, verses 13, 14, 15, where Messiah says, the broad road that many travel lead to destruction. The narrow road few choose. The narrow road, those that are walking that road, those are the chosen, those are the elect. Those that are walking the broad road to destruction are not the elect. And then finally, Matthew 24, verses 22 to 24. Unless those days were short, and talking about the tribulation period, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. The elect's sake are those who come to faith in Messiah during the tribulation period, are described as saints in Revelation 14, 12, as those who keep the commandments of God and the faith of Yeshua. God says, if I didn't shorten the days of the tribulation period, there wouldn't be anybody left to come alive into the kingdom. But for the sake of those who have become believers and are walking the path of God, he wants them brought into the kingdom, so he shortens the time of utter tribulation. And lastly, back to Titus chapter 1, as we're running out of time. To the faith of God's elect and the acknowledgement of the truth which accords with godliness. What truth are we talking about that leads one into godliness? The Torah. Psalm 119, verse 142. But because time is so short, let's just go to 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8, and then we'll close. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. It says, for bodily exercise profits a little, but godliness is profitable for all things, having promise of the life that now is and of that which is to come. So is godliness a good thing or a bad thing?
Good thing.
It's a good thing. And we'll pick up next week, Lord willing, in Titus chapter 1, verse 2.